Blog Talk Radio.
Aggravation, but I'm Shane, and I'm here with Jeff, as usual, and we're starting to lubricate a little bit with some whiskey, both of us, and my throat's feeling a little bit better, so maybe talking even a little bit more this time around. And today we'll be talking about things that disappointed us in 2015.
And I think I'm going to kick this off with disappointment of the year in the TV world for me, which was Jessica Jones. I know you and I had talked about this. We broke down the entire series, and I can't think of another TV series that I watched this year that had built me up to such high promises and then just broke my heart with the last four or five episodes of that show being almost like they had brought in different writers to do it. It wasn't the same feeling. And I don't know that there was a more disappointing end to a series, disappointing end to a character, or just overall disappointing series than what I saw the last five episodes of Jessica Jones.
Fair enough. I would not have that as my disappointment of the year simply because I enjoyed it so much. Those first eight episodes you and I talked about on another episode that ended up, you know, nowhere, had me thinking it might end up being one of my best series of all time, at least for one season. And of course, like you said, it went downhill after those next five, but I wasn't disappointed until more than halfway through the series. So that's why it didn't end up being on my list, even though, like you said, the last few episodes were disappointing. I actually kind of disagree with you a little bit about it ending, because after hearing about how the Purple Man story actually ended in the comics, I actually prefer this ending as opposed to her punching him and sending him to jail, where when we know, you know, him going to jail really doesn't do anything.
No, he would have just talked his way out of there within a couple of seconds. But
exactly. Unless they kept him heavily sedated, and that's no way for anybody to live anyway. Mine was actually The Strain this year, because I thought the first season was absolutely fantastic. I thought the first season, there was something awesome in every episode. In fact, in almost every episode, there was four or five times where I was like, oh my God, that was awesome. Oh my God, that was awesome. Oh my God, that was awesome, you know? And this year, I just did not feel that. I didn't have the same emotional connection. I didn't have the same awe. I didn't like the story as much. I didn't really believe some of the things that the characters were doing. And even just the ending of it, where with the little kid walking away from his mom, with his mom knowing that his mom is a monster, I thought was completely unbelievable. So The Strain this year takes my disappointing show of the year, and I don't even know that I'm invested enough anymore in it to watch it for the third season.
And it sounds like the second most disappointing for you might be Sleepy Hollow, the way you've been talking about how that's just gone downhill. And I haven't gotten that far into either one of them yet for this year, but for me, it was such a high. And I didn't realize that we had lost that show. I thought that our Jessica Jones breakdown actually made it to air.
Right, our second one did, but the first one we lost.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, another technical difficulty thing there. But for me, the Jessica Jones thing, it was just because I had it built up to after eight episodes. I mean, we did a couple of different takes on it. We did where we broke down the first four episodes, and at that time you were talking about how it might be one of your top five of all time, and I was like, eh, it's good, but I want to give it a little more time. Then after eight episodes, I was like, yeah, this might be one of my top five too. And then just to have it go from that moment when he broke out again, and he was, he broke out of Jessica's clutches again, and to have it go from that and then all of a sudden, oh my God, he's getting more powerful, and just it became nonsensical. There was nothing about it that I liked. It was just such a disappointment that I couldn't have gone any other way.
The real problem to me was that there was too much padding in those last five episodes. It was like they had a great story, they knew where they wanted to go with it, but then they realized we don't have enough story here to make it to 13 episodes.
Exactly.
And that was probably like one of the dictates, is that it had to be 13 episodes. I think if it had been 10 and we hadn't seen kind of the stupidity of the upstairs neighbor whose brother was killed, I forget her name, and we hadn't seen her, you know, knowing what was going on and still letting Kilgrave loose, because basically him escaping for the second straight episode. I think if there had been a bit tighter writing and we'd only had 10 episodes of the show, I think you and I would have still thought it was a triumph. Even if we had been a little bit disappointed by the ending, we still would have thought it was a triumph of a show, rather than, you know, going from thinking Jessica Jones is even better than Daredevil to thinking, ugh.
It went from Jessica Jones being a fantastic character and somebody you wanted to watch and got invested in, just her herself, and also her friend. And you're right, it's amazing our short-term memory, because I'm even forgetting the blonde friend's name. But
Patsy Walker.
Yep, that's right, Patsy, and or Trish. Her real name was, well, her real name on the show was Trish. Not her real name in real life, but to have her be an intriguing character. You had the guy who's going to end up being a nice villain in the Daredevil series that was an intriguing character. It almost went like they ran out of ideas after about, you're right, after about 10 episodes, all of a sudden Trish I'm spacing out on him, Simpson, they all of a sudden stopped being main focal point characters, and now all of a sudden the last 4 or 5 episodes we're zeroing in on Malcolm and that upstairs neighbor, and it's like, wait, what happened here? How did we go from a story about Jessica Jones, Trish, and Simpson to now Malcolm and his upstairs neighbor, who it seems like he's trying to woo? It didn't make any sense. It didn't follow the story correctly. It seemed like there was a whole lot of loss. Which disappointed me completely.
I don't have a problem with Malcolm getting more screen time, because he was kind of a major character in the comics, I guess, as far as being a major supporting character for her. So I guess I'm okay with that. But I didn't like the whole kind of romance that was building between him and the upstairs neighbor. I thought, although I do have to say that I think that, you know, the final scene of the show where he answers the phone alias investigations for her was a bit heartwarming and made me kind of want to see what goes on next for her. Even if I didn't like the way that they padded out the rest of the series.
And unfortunately, I don't know that we're going to get a next for her. I think I'm hoping...
We are!
I'm hoping that if we do, it's more in the Luke Cage story, because they're doing the Luke Cage episode, and I'm hoping that... Or the Luke Cage season next, and I'm hoping that that's more of a continuation than a backstory.
Well, they're doing the Daredevil season 2 next, and then I think Luke Cage is after that.
Yeah,
I know that's kind of a semantic argument, but...
And then I think our Iron Fist is right after Luke Cage.
I can't wait for that one. Have you read any of the most recent Iron Fist comics?
Not the most recent ones, no.
Oh, you should check that out. If you can deal with the art, which I thought was awesome, but I think it would drive some people crazy, I think you'd really enjoy it.
If you want to speak about art and an annoying art being in comics, you might want to check out something called Art Ops. I don't know if you've read that at all, but that's...
Art Ops?
Yeah, it's an interesting series. I'm only the first two books into it, but I don't know yet what to think, but that's definitely an interesting series. Anyway, we got way off the topic here.
Well, since we're on comics, we might as well move to our disappointing comic of the year, and for me, it's Squirrel Girl. I know that it isn't something that you were necessarily looking forward to or even planning on reading at all, but the only reason I thought, you know, I would give it a shot is because I listened to a podcast called Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men. And right now it's called Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men. By the time that we air this, they might have changed the title, because Rachel has actually come out as transgender, so she's changing her name to Jay. So it might be called Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men by the time this airs, so I don't want to, you know, I just want to clarify that just in case that's happened by then. Totally support, you know, her in that. But I don't support her proclamation that Squirrel Girl is absolutely delightful and should be a read, because I thought it was ridiculous, I thought it was stupid, pointless, and I'm even a bit upset that Squirrel Girl was one of the new Avengers, because I really don't want to ever read her ever again.
And you're right, I was.
And actually that ties in very well, because in the comics she's also the nanny, nanny of Luke and Jessica.
Oh, well, that makes it even worse. But I actually was, because you, right before you decided it was horrible, you started talking it up, and I was actually about to read it. And then you had said how bad it was, so I decided not to. But if I have to go with a disappointing comic of the year, I have to go with Vision. And we talked about this on the last episodes, but Vision is one of my favorites. He's always been one of my favorites. Between him and Hawkeye, those might be my two favorite comic book characters of all time. As far as Marvel goes, I Flash, Green Lantern, and DC World. But to see what they're doing with Vision, I really have no interest in watching him with an android family living in the suburbs. There's nothing about it that seems entertaining to me.
I'm not sure that I'm entertained by it yet, but I am a little bit interested in the story, especially since we know after the first, I think it's after the end of the first issue, that we know that there's some kind of a major catastrophe that happens in the town as a result of the Vision family being there. And it is a bit weird, though, that they went this route with him, considering that they've done a mostly solid job of building up the characters that are going to be in their movies and their TV shows and giving them kind of interesting things to do in comics and high profile things to do in the comics. And it's weird to me that they went this route with the Vision when it probably is going to end up being something that not a lot of people are going to pick up.
To me, it was lost. The whole thing is lost. I was out of after about the first four pages because I could not get into it. It just, the story itself just didn't mesh with everything else that's going on in the Marvel world. And you're talking about how they build up characters. That brings me to the all-new Iron Man, which has been phenomenal, too. I think I'm four books into that, and that's been a very entertaining series.
Yeah, what's going on with Doom in there is awesome. What's going on with Doctor Doom in there is awesome.
Yeah, I like what's going on with Doctor Doom. I also liked the Doctor Strange books that have come out this year. There's been a lot of actual good that I've seen this year. It's just I can't put Vision anywhere near the good.
No, and I know that you're a little bit disappointed with Extraordinary X-Men as well right now.
I think we had talked about how we're going to just do a whole show on that, so I'm going to save it for that. But the Extraordinary X-Men, there's just, as far as it being an X-Men story, okay, fine, I get it. Again, Scott Summers dies in it, so, you know, we have our continuity there. But there's something just off about where, how can a guy who is, they traveled forward in time, and you have Bobby, the young Bobby, out of the closet. So if this is his future self, how is his future self still in the closet? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about that at some point, because I think, you know, you and I need to predict like what the end game is going to be with that, because they can't stay in the future forever. You know, they have to age at some point. let's go ahead and move on to disappointing movie of the year.
Do you want to do that now, or do you want to go straight to wrestling? Since you are. I already know what my disappointing movie of the year is.
Well, I guess we can say it briefly. Mine is Southpaw. I was actually looking forward to this because I'm not only a big boxing fan, I'm also a fan of Michael Gyllenhaal, and I'm a fan of the guy that wrote the movie, but, oh, I just could not get into it. It didn't even feel like a boxing movie to me. It was more like trying to, like, do some kind of a weird-ass redemption story and a revenge story all in one, and it was just boring, poorly written, poorly acted. I had to shut it off after like half an hour. I just could not get into that.
And I haven't seen it yet. It is on my list, but I don't know how long it's going to stay on my list after now hearing you talk about it twice. I haven't seen it yet. I guess a movie that we both did.
Wait. Did I see Mike Gyllenhaal? That is his alcohol affecting me.
And my alcohol affected me. I didn't catch that.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I had a toss up here between my least favorite of the year. I didn't think that Insurgent was very good. Saw that at the beginning of the year. The movie itself was good. I really, really did not enjoy the ending. I thought the ending of Insurgent was, you want to end a movie when you know there's a third part coming out. You want to end it on some kind of cliffhanger. I don't know what the cliffhanger here was. They are leaving the city. They found out that there's a whole world outside the gates, and they're just leaving, and that's the way they ended it. And it did not leave me with any interest in seeing the third movie, which is sad, because I thought the first one was very good.
Well, the first one was very good if you haven't read the books. If you read the book, then the first one was not too good.
Well, and you can say that about any book that's been made into a movie.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I actually liked the Losing It Now Hunger Games series. I thought the Hunger Games series was good. I actually liked the Lord of the Rings movies better than I liked the Lord of the Rings books.
Oh, and I'm the opposite on both those. I like the Lord of the Rings books and the Hunger Games books better than the movies. But I like both those movies too. So.
Okay.
But anyway, back to my actual disappointment of the year, which it's funny because I shocked you with it last week when we did it on the episode that didn't come, and we've talked about it multiple times since then, and every single time we've talked about it, you have the same anger. So I'm interested to see if now four times you can have that same anger again. But my disappointment of the year was Star Wars.
And you're still an idiot.
Well, and simply because, I mean, you know how it is with me, and I like a story leading up. I'm more about the big picture. As far as the movie itself, I thought the movie itself was fun. It was entertaining. The reason it was and I'm going to own it. I've already got it reserved. It's on my list to, as soon as it gets released on digital Amazon, it will be in my collection. But and I'll probably watch it 400 times in the next 5 years. That being said, the reason it was disappointing to me was because it felt more like a reboot of the original series than a continuation of the original series. I was disappointed because I was hoping more for a continuating story, and what I felt like I got was a rebooted story with just new characters. That's why it was disappointing.
And you know, that's understandable to me, just being the fact that you only saw, like me, you only saw like four or five movies from 2015. You and I are both much more comics, television, wrestling guys, because we do enjoy this story. We enjoy seeing the characters develop. We enjoy the plot, you know, going on and on. We don't necessarily like, you know, a story that lasts for two and a half hours. We would much rather see or read things continue for those characters on an indefinite basis. Am I correct?
Exactly, and that's why I think the majority of the comic book movies we see or movies that we see are continuation movies. They're either comic book movies where we already know some of the story going in, or they're like Insurgent was, or the new Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, which is a continuation of a story, or in this way, Star Wars, to me, which was a continuation. It was supposed to be a continuation of a story. And then also we have our children's movies, mainly because I have four of them, with the Inside Out and other children's movies that I saw throughout the year. But
well, I don't necessarily consider Pixar movies to be children's movies. I mean, yes, they're cartoons, they're animated, they're stop motion, whatever you want to call them, but I think they make them just as much for adults as they do for children. I mean, are you really going to tell me that WALL-E is a children's movie?
Well, I guess that's exactly it. It's more of a family movie. It's cute and fun for the children, and then it has enough adult humor in there to make it entertaining for the adults.
Exactly. And I thought Star Wars was, you know, other than, you know, some brutal parts, could be a family movie as well, as long as you're talking about your family being, you know, kids maybe 12 or older. I definitely would not take my 6-year-old goddaughter to see it, even though she really wants to. You and I will talk about this more in our Star Wars episode coming up, but I thought that they did that. Well, you're right, it was a continuation. I think they also, you know, did set it up to go. I mean, you're right, it was a bit of a reboot. I think that was kind of important to kind of show where they were in continuity now, and then they will continue the story later on, and we also get a continuation of the story in the movie as well. So I think it was a bit of both, and I think that's perfectly fine. I'm just disappointed they didn't have Rey in the new Monopoly game.
Yeah, and I was going to lead off our next episode with that before we get into the Star Wars talk.
Okay, then I'll edit that out.
No, you can leave that in there because that gives a little teaser. But anyway, moving on to my disappointing wrestler of the year, I'm going to go with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt, to me, and the reason I'm going with him more than somebody like Daniel Bryan who was injured is simply because Bray Wyatt was there week in, week out, in the thick of things. Standing at the Royal Rumble, they made him to be this phenomenal. He's going to have this fantastic year. I mean, there was a time when he was...
Whoa. Phenomenal applies to one person in wrestling, AJ Styles.
And we'll be seeing him soon.
Thank God.
Hopefully, but it doesn't sound like Royal Rumble, but that's another story for another time. But Bray Wyatt, to me, he was standing in last year's Royal Rumble all by himself. Arms spread open, waiting for people to come down, declaring this is going to be my year. We see that at the beginning of the year, and then at the end of the year, he's in just a horrible feud with Roman Reigns throughout the majority of the middle of the year. He ends the year getting his butt kicked by the Geriatric Brothers.
It's just, I love that.
I don't know if it's because of his character not catching on, which I doubt, because you see the fireflies, you hear the people cheer for him, or if it's so much creative not knowing what to do with a supernatural character anymore. It doesn't make any sense how somebody who has all this talent, all this charisma, who's great in the ring, who is you know, fantastic on the mic, might be the best talker that is there on a weekly basis. Paul Heyman, of course, probably the best talker in wrestling today, but he's not there every week. Bray Wyatt may be the best talker in wrestling today. How they could not develop this character into a main eventer, it doesn't make sense to me, and that's got to be why he's my disappointment.
Fair enough. He was actually very disappointing. And actually, when we did this show a week ago or so, I actually had Daniel Bryan in this spot, but I thought about it a little bit more, and I actually think I'm going to go with another guy who, towards the end of 2015, 2014, looked like he was going to be a breakout star, a main eventer for WWE, and actually the same thing happened to him kind of at the end of 2012. And I'm going to go with Dolph Ziggler. He was the one who got the pinfall to knock the Authority out of Power at the end of Survivor Series 2014. And of course, there was also Sting's involvement, but he still was the guy that took out three members of Team Authority, or Team Rollins, whatever you want to call them, and knocked the Authority out of Power. And it looked like he was set for a breakout year. And right before that, he had a phenomenal series of matches with, there I go using phenomenal. He had an outstanding series of matches, let's say, against Cesaro over the Intercontinental title right before that. And he looked like he was poised to have a very strong year at the upper card / main event level of WWE. And he then started to just go downhill. He went to a point where he is wrestling matches where he is playing the babyface in peril the entire time, with just a few hope spots here and there. It's like he forgot how to be a real performer. And now, in the last few months, he started dressing like Shawn Michaels, and he's nowhere near the performer that Shawn Michaels is. He was getting to the point where he was getting to Shawn Michaels levels last year, but now he's to the point where he's more like, I don't know, like a Jannetty or a Brooklyn Brawler, the way he gets his ass kicked in every match. And you can almost tell that he's just kind of resigned himself to running out his contract, and you know, that's what I thought he was going to do, but didn't he just like recently re-sign with WWE as well? So now we're going to get to see him doing that for the next couple of years. It bugs me because Ziggler is so talented. I thought at one point he was going to be like a combination of Kurt Hennig, Chris Jericho, and Shawn Michaels, and just, you know, be like an excellent wrestler. And now he's to the point where when I see him on my screen, I'm no longer excited for him, and I think that sucks.
And it's funny that you went with him as your top choice, because he was my second choice. And I don't know there, too, do we blame this on creative, or do we blame this on him losing his passion? His contract was due to run.
Well, it could be both. I mean, it could be the creative didn't go the way he wanted, so he just kind of, you know,
gave up.
Kind of like CM Punk did, except for CM Punk left, and Ziggler decided to stick.
Well, Ziggler's contract was up in August, and there was talk about him leaving to go to Ring of Honor and JPW and back to the independents, but then he re-signed in August, and it is kind of disappointing with Ziggler, because he did start off the year in such great position, having had a great 2014. I mean, he started off 2014. Was it 2014 he started off as heavyweight champion and then got the concussion, or was that 13?
He didn't start off 2014 as the champ. No, it was 2013.
Okay, yeah.
It was 13.
Yeah,
it was 13. He won the day after WrestleMania 30.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That's right. He did. But, you know, even still, 2014, he had a fantastic year. And then to have him, and I don't know where the turning point was. I think it may have been once he got in that feud with Rusev over this love triangle. I think that might have been the turning point to where both men's careers not only stuttered and stalled, but they went backwards. That storyline alone could go down as one of the worst storylines I've ever seen. Had no place being in wrestling with the type of guys that they had it in. And then, you know, it just did seem, it also seemed that Dolph Ziggler just said, you know what, they're never going to have me higher than the mid-card. I'm just going to wrestle like a mid-carder now. And it doesn't seem like his heart's in it anymore.
That's exactly how I feel as well. You know, you just mentioned New Japan. Him being in New Japan, I think, would be phenomenal. There I go using it again. But he'd have great matches with AJ Styles. He's coming to WWE, of course. I think he against Kenny Omega would be terrific. Him against, you know, a lot of guys in New Japan would be terrific. And he can still have great matches, but he just needs to remember how to do it or get his heart back into it somehow.
Well, and, you know, bringing that up with the Kenny Omega brought me to thinking, when the WWE, they've already got Finn Balor, who was Prince Iaukea, and then
Prince Devitt,
less whiskey. They've already got Prince Levitt, and they have, or Devitt again.
I was going to say, still Devitt.
And, you know, they signed Anderson, Gallows, and now AJ Styles. It's almost like they're bringing Bullet Club over to WWE, which I think would be fantastic. But the thing that amazed me is the year that Kenny Omega had, who I think was on par with AJ Styles. AJ Styles was fantastic, or phenomenal, the whole year. With him being a heel and working both Ring of Honor and New Japan Pro Wrestling, he was fantastic the whole year. But why did WWE decide to not sign Kenny Omega? Why did they go with Gallows and Anderson as opposed to Kenny Omega? That just, to me, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. Omega was under contract with them at one point and asked for his release. So I don't know if there was hard feelings from that, or if maybe he just didn't want to leave New Japan.
Well, I know there was talk last time he was in when he did have the developmental deal, because they signed him out of the Ring of was he Ring of Honor, or was he? They signed him out of the.
He was for a while, but I can't remember if this was before he went to Ring of Honor or
it was after.
Right after.
Because they signed him out of Ring of Honor, and he had a whole lot of hype going in there, and then for some reason I don't know if he didn't like the way they were using him in NXT, but then he'd asked for his release, and maybe that's why maybe that's another one like Ethan Carter when he was in NXT. WWE really dropped the ball with him too. You know, maybe it's a case where there's hard feelings and he doesn't want to go back. They've got to look at people like this and say, how did we let this talent go?
Yeah, they really should. And speaking of talent, we probably should talk about our disappointing match of the year before we run out of time. And I'm going to go with Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker from SummerSlam. Not because it was a bad match. I thought it was actually a very good match. But simply because of the ending of it. It was so disappointing the way that they structured it. The wrestlers were out of position. The ending made no sense because of that, because the timekeeper who rang the bell could not possibly have seen that Undertaker was tapping to the Kimura lock. It was poorly done. The announcers had to explain it for like 5 minutes. We couldn't see what was going on either. It was so confusing and so poorly done that it ruined the entire match for me.
And I agree, that was a terrible, terrible ending. Problem with that is, and I think we've kind of gone through this, I'm more into the lead-up and what I'm expecting, and then to have something horribly disappointing happen, to have the opposite of what I think is going to be fantastic happen. To me, Ambrose Owens from Survivor Series, we had talked about that. We thought that had the potential to be a 5-star match, and since then, they have put on 4.5 5-star matches. Their one at TLC might have been the match of the night. To see that kind of talent go into Survivor Series and just lay an egg the way they did, to me, that was the most disappointing of the year.
Fair enough, because I don't think they laid an egg, but it certainly wasn't the match we were expecting them to have.
I would have gone as far as to say lay an egg simply because it didn't look like either one of them. It looked like they were pacing themselves. It didn't look like either one of them had their full heart into it because they knew where it was going to go and they needed to be fresh for later on the night. And you know, to have Owens lose that match and then not even show up, I think you mentioned that last time, not even show up the rest of the card, it was just highly disappointing.
Yeah, fair enough. That's all we got, folks, for this week. Sorry we had to cut that last part short, but, you know, we run out of time sometimes. We'll try to do better next time.
Have a house party, we don't need nobody. Turn your TV off, break that boombox out. We'll wake up all the neighbors till the whole block hates us and the cops show up and try to shut us down. If you're gonna be a homebody, we're gonna have a house party. If you wanna be a homebody, we're gonna have a house party.